You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past. I'm your host, Matt Pappas, certified life coach specializing in overcoming anxiety and trauma recovery. And this podcast is all about helping you move forward from what holds you back. Each week, you'll hear from coaches, clinicians, and advocates who've overcome tremendous odds and are now using their journey to inspire you throughout yours. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Are you ready? Let's do this. Greetings, everyone, and thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to tune into the show. And I hope that this episode inspires and encourages you on your own journey. Special welcome if you're listening to the podcast for the very first time. Super glad that you're here, and I hope that you'll enjoy it and perhaps check out some past episodes as well. And for those who are regular listeners, you guys rock, you're amazing, and I appreciate the support so very much. A big shout out to my sponsors, INLPcenter.org, offering world-class online NLP and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. I'm honored to be able to receive my certifications from INLP Center through their incredible training and certification programs. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. If you find these podcasts helpful and maybe even a little bit enjoyable too, then definitely consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it with your friends. That would be awesome. So today I'm joined by two-time international best-selling author, coach, and expert on intergenerational trauma, Emily Wanderer Cohen. Emily is a second-generation Holocaust survivor and knows what it feels like to live with transmitted trauma. She helps clients end the cycle of abuse in their life, and works with not only Holocaust survivors, but also spousal, childhood, and sexual abuse survivors, as well as those who've experienced natural disasters and more. Emily shares with us her expertise in the area of intergenerational trauma, including what this type of trauma is, warning signs to watch for, how we can end the cycle, and the treatment options available. I'm honored to be able to have Emily on the podcast today to cover this important topic, and perhaps it's one that you might not be very familiar with. So without further delay, let's join my chat with Emily Wanderer Cohen right now. Hey, Emily, welcome to Beyond Your Past. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Matt?
I am doing very well. Thank you. It's an honor to have you on here. I'm excited to learn more about you and intergenerational trauma and all the amazing things that you work with your clients on. And of course, your website is traumahealingcoach.com, which I will be sure and put in the show notes and in the blog post. So before we get underway, why don't we take a second? You can share a little bit more about you, what your work is about, and anything else you'd like to clue the listeners on as to who Emily Cohen is.
Okay. So thanks, Matt. And I wanted to thank you for having me on today. I've been really looking forward to this. So my name is Emily Wanderer Cohen, and I do include my maiden name, because if you try to Google Emily Cohen, you're going to get about 1,000 people. So I started using my maiden name for that reason, but also because it's kind of a tribute to my father. And I'm the last wanderer of in that family. So I am a second generation Holocaust survivor. And what that means is I'm a child of a Holocaust survivor. And I actually am also a third generation. I'm a grandchild of Holocaust survivors as well. And that's not so common because, most second gens or 2Gs, as we call ourselves, didn't have the luxury of grandparents because most were exterminated in concentration camp. So that's one thing that marks us as a generation. What's my why, I guess, is what I should answer. And my why is I see a lot of 2Gs and even 3Gs, those grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, who are still carrying around trauma of a horrible, horrible experience that they didn't even experience it firsthand. And it's been passed down in DNA, and you know, it presents itself in physical and in emotional / psychological ways, but you can, you know, I've discovered ways to be able to put that in perspective. And when you understand something, then you can manage your reactions to it. So that is my way of healing intergenerational trauma.
Well, I am so interested to learn more about this because I have not yet covered this on either my blog or this podcast. So for those who are unfamiliar with intergenerational trauma, maybe you can give a little bit more background as to what exactly that is, how it becomes manifested in your life, and kind of all those things. So we can get more of a background as to, you know, the type of clients that you work with and what you study.
Right, right. Sure. So intergenerational trauma, it's also called, it actually has several different names, transgenerational trauma, transmitted trauma, inherited trauma, but all of them are basically describing the effects of a trauma that the sufferer didn't even experience firsthand. It's an invisible, I call it an invisible weight. There's just this feeling, and it's been passed down through DNA. And there's a fascinating study that I like to talk about that really kind of explains the phenomenon. And it was done at Emory University with mice, and the researchers were actually trying to prove whether this, you know, trauma does get passed down from generation to generation. So they took a group of prepubescent mice, so no babies, no pregnancies, etc., and they simultaneously exposed these mice to the smell of cherry blossoms and electric shock. So each time they did one, they also injected the other. So the mice would associate pain and the smell of cherry blossoms together. So when they took away the electric shock and only introduced the smell of cherry blossoms, the mice still scurried around as if they were in pain. They were expecting the pain to show up. And so you might look at that and say, okay, well, that makes sense, right? But the really fascinating part of this study, and the one that proves how trauma can be passed down through DNA, is that these researchers then looked at two generations of mice later, three, four, even five generations of mice later, when they injected or introduced the smell of cherry blossoms, what do you think happened? Any guess, Matt?
I'm going to guess that they absolutely reacted in the same way as the previous generation. If I'm following where you're heading with this analogy.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that was what, you know, the researchers kind of were hoping to prove, but then they were still really surprised that, wow, five generations later, these mice had never experienced the smell of cherry blossoms before, or, you know, the connection with pain. And yet the very first time they introduced the smell, the mice reacted as if they were in pain. So that's, you know, if we take a look at, say, something, a horrible trauma like the Holocaust, what happens is, I've talked to people who even though they were born and raised in the U.S., never had any reason to, you know, worry about the SS or, you know, someone coming to take them away, but they would hear a siren and hide in their closet, you know, and that's an extreme. But I've also, you know, worked with a client who could never let people know her address. She was worried that if she told someone her address, that even if it was a friend, they might come and do harm, or they might tell someone else who would come do her harm. There are, you know, those are definite extremes. But there are some real common triggers, like the fear of travel, like worrying that you won't be able to get home, which makes sense if you think that your family had been picked up for concentration camp and never did get home. So, you know, that's one. There's a pursuit of perfection, the fear of making mistakes, because if you make a mistake, you might not be able to correct it, do a course correction. And, you know, if you connect dots, that makes sense as well, because in the concentration camp, if somebody made a mistake, that was life or death. So those are some of the psychological. There's like hypervigilance, unexplained anxieties, irrational fears that you don't understand where they came from because you never experienced something like that. So those are the emotional components of intergenerational trauma. Physically, there's actually there are other studies that prove that out as well. There's a well-known study in this business that second-generation Holocaust survivors have lower levels of cortisol. Now, you may know that cortisol is the hormone that regulates stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our DNA has been changed by the fact that our parents were under so much stress and duress. We have less of that hormone. It's fascinating to me because it really means that we as a generation, and, you know, I have not seen studies go down to the third generation on this, but we're not as well equipped to handle something like the Holocaust as our parents were, which I find incredibly fascinating because, you know, we say we're resilient, yet physically we're handicapped that way. Just something that fascinates me personally. And there are some other, you know, cortisol is just one thing, but there are studies, there are medical studies. There's one gentleman, a doctor in the Netherlands, who's looking at the fact that second and third generation survivors have higher levels of cardiovascular disease, irregular heartbeat, and other chronic illnesses like fibromyalgia, things that are typically associated with trauma, fibromyalgia, and lupus. So it's pretty wide ranging.
You mentioned about how second generation survivors have lower levels of cortisol. Do you know of any studies? And I'm just kind of curious now because I enjoy studying the brain a lot, and it sounds like you do as well. Do you know of any studies where there's differing levels of, say, like serotonin or dopamine as well? You know, or is it just mainly cortisol and, as far as you know, regulating stress?
Yeah, I don't know of any that looked at dopamine or the study about cortisol was done, I'm going to say 2013, and it's by a woman named Rachel Yehuda. And she only looked at second generation Holocaust survivors. And I would be, you know, curious to know and kind of guessing where it might go if you looked at second generation of other trauma survivors. I do know of a more recent study about pregnant women who were pregnant and while they were pregnant encountered trauma, and these babies have a higher rate of I can't remember, it's RSA, it's a respiratory infection, which, you know, not related to the Holocaust, but it's becoming clearer that trauma can, you know, has all kinds of different effects, not just, you know, it's not just in your head, right?
So many that listen to this podcast, and of course myself included, we know that that chronic illness, chronic pain can many oftentimes be traced back to different types of trauma in your life. So yeah, I would not doubt one bit that there are other things that haven't even been discovered yet that can be traced back to trauma. So I'm kind of curious too. So the clients that you see and people that come to you for help, are they generally coming to you because they think that there's something wrong, or maybe they're worried that something might be wrong in the future? And I guess I'm kind of curious how many of your clients generally are already feeling the effects, but maybe they're just not sure what it is, or maybe they're just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have people who come to me in a couple of ways. One is they know that they've got irrational fears. I mean, they realize, like, God, I don't understand. I don't know why I'm petrified of leaving my house or, you know, crossing that street and these are real, these are real things for a woman who's in her 60s. She came to me with that. And finally said, you know what? I am just so tired of feeling like this, feeling fearful, anxious, you know, ready to, you know, resentful, ready to blow at any second. She was, you know, very, very circumspect and suspicious of anybody. And she's like, I'm tired of this. It's just, you know, it gets me down. She wanted, she had this sense from doing some reading that it was from the Holocaust, but wasn't entirely sure. So we definitely dug into that. But yeah, most times people come through that, or they'll hear me speak and I'll talk about my story and they'll come up afterwards and say, wow, you sound just like me. What, I just never realized that was a thing. And I never realized that there were other people out there who felt the same way.
Isn't that so incredible whenever somebody reaches out to you? And I get this as well, where somebody said, you know, hey, I heard a podcast, or I heard, you know, I read a blog post or something. And they're like, I can't believe somebody else feels the same way that I do. Or, you know, I thought I was all alone. And I know back when I first started realizing that I was a survivor of childhood trauma. And I mean, I guess probably in the back of my mind, I probably figured that there was somebody else out there that felt that way, but I never knew it was as widespread and that there's so many people who have endured some type of trauma in their life, you know? And I mean, specifically coming from where, you know, my background of bullying and childhood sexual abuse, I mean, it's 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys as of right now. And, you know, I was blown away at the time when I started reaching out for help as to how many people also struggle with the same things I do. And it sounds like a lot of your clients get these kind of aha moments of, wow, I can't believe that there's just that this is really a thing like I thought it was, right?
Right. Right. Exactly. And yeah. And what's really, really powerful is when I conduct one of my workshops and these people come together and can actually see others who are in the same boat in a positive and healing fashion, because, you know, you probably have been through some of that one-on-one, you know, therapy where you talk through what happened but there's never any resolution. I had trouble finding someone who understood what I was going through. They just, you know, nobody understood the Holocaust or how that manifested itself in me. It was more, oh, your mom is, you know, is horrible and mean and damaged, but there was nothing ever deeper. And then there are a lot of support groups for second generation, and I've been in them, and all, again, it's just repeating the stories over and over. Oh yeah, I feel that way. Oh yeah, my mom did that. And then there's no, okay, now what? I just didn't understand why there was no light at the end of the tunnel. There was no way out. No one had that flashlight to help me get through. So I kind of did it myself. and now I'm providing that light for others. And it feels incredible.
I love it. That's so awesome. I can just imagine how much help and support you offer to everyone who reaches out to you. I think even like probably before you even start working with them in a session or something, it's just this feeling that they must have of somebody finally gets it. Like,
right.
I mean, exactly. I know. Yeah. And I mean, I get that with clients as well and people who reach out, and it's just like, I can't believe somebody finally understands. And then you suddenly have this kind of weight lifted off your shoulders of like, I'm really not alone. Like, thank God. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some signs of intergenerational trauma? You know, perhaps somebody is maybe starting to feel some of the ways that you had touched on before. But if somebody is really kind of questioning, is this really something trauma that I should be looking at? Is it just something else? Do you have any insight on some common signs or things that they can look for that might be a prompt to, hey, you know, maybe I should go seek some help?
Yeah. And actually, this is a good time to mention that, you know, while my personal experience was through the Holocaust, and that's, you know, typically where most of my clients, you know, they resonate with that. Intergenerational trauma isn't just connected to the Holocaust. It's been shown with, you know, a variety of genocides, forced relocations, and, you know, other huge traumatic events like 9/11 or Hiroshima. So there are some signs, you know, among those children. There is, you know, there are a couple of things. One is this, it's fear. It's a fear of an unknown, and you can't explain it. And, you know, like whether it's a loud noise or whether it's, you know, you're somehow in your head, you're thinking that someone's going to take you away and you don't know why. You live in, you know, San Francisco, and it's like, well, nobody's coming to take me. Why do I feel that way? Why do I feel on edge all the time? There's also just a lot of tamping down of your emotions, because either there are a couple of things that happen, especially with, you know, again, my experience is mostly with the Holocaust, but again, it can be broader. So Holocaust survivors tended to fall into one of two camps. They either talked about it all the time, and then if you as a child would come home and say, oh my God, there's somebody on the bus and they were going to beat me up, and your parents said, ugh, that's nothing compared to what I went through. And then you're not validated. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that continues through your adulthood, that you want to be validated over and over. And you just don't feel like your emotions or you are being seen or your emotions being heard. The other side of that is that other Holocaust survivors didn't talk about it at all. And so, but yet their children knew that something, their parents had endured something that was so painful that they couldn't talk about it. So then those children never spoke about their own feelings because they were afraid it would upset their parent. So again, you've got someone who can't express their feelings or emotions. And so there's this group of, you know, there's a group of people that are marked by, gee, we've got emotions, but we've never really been allowed to talk about them.
While you were talking, I was thinking to myself as well, I'm like, I have a feeling that some of the things that she's going to mention are also, you know, not just only for Holocaust survivors as well. And of course, mm-hmm. she pointed that out. I'm curious, do many of your clients struggle also with extreme anxiety in other areas as well in their life?
Yes, it's anxiety in so many ways. Whether it's they're worried about their children's well-being and their grandchildren's well-being, they're anxious in the workplace. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. Yeah, you carry it in every aspect of your life, in relationships, in, you know, your personal life and professional life.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, that cortisol doesn't help.
Damn cortisol.
I mean, when I figured that, when I read that study, that was the first big eye-opener for me. That was where I went, oh, wow, that explains so much.
Oh,
and no. It was kind of funny because I had had a career in high-tech PR, which means equals high stress, mm-hmm. really high anxiety, like lots of pressure. And I was always like, I was just so wound up all the time and ready to blow and like stressed out. And I mean, most people would be stressed out, but I was like to the nth degree. And I read that and I went, God, why did I, you know, that's like one of the worst careers that I could have picked because of my cortisol. But I didn't realize that then.
Right. If only we knew before what we knew now, we'd be like, my God, what was I thinking when I went in this career? Right. Or something.
Right.
Oh my God.
Right. Right.
So, when we are talking about Holocaust survivors, and you know, as you mentioned, most of your clients are second generation and such. Obviously, we know that just because your parents, your grandparents were Holocaust survivors or involved in a Holocaust, that it doesn't mean that you're automatically going to be or have some type of intergenerational trauma, but. Do you know of any statistics as to how often it actually does occur?
Ooh, I wish. Wish I had statistics. No, I mean, I do, you know, I do see people who come say, that was really interesting, but I don't have any trauma. Mm-hmm. And then I just go, mm-hmm.
All right.
we know that one, right? But I do, you know, there are a lot of parents who were really warm and loving and supportive of their kids. And so the underlying anxiety or, other kinds of other manifestations of the trauma are less visible than with those who had parents who were abusive on top of that trauma.
So how does someone stop the cycle in your experience? What can we do to cope with it and to do our part to try and stop it, you know, with our current generation?
Yeah. So when I was going through my healing process, I created this, it's a 5-step method that I call CLEAR. So it's clarity, love, empowerment, acceptance, and reclamation to reclaim your life. And what it really does, and that's really what people come to me for, is like, okay, I want some relief myself, but I also don't want my kids and my grandkids growing up this way. And so what really, I mean, you can't change your DNA per se, but what you can do is recognize the signs, understand where they're coming from, you know, where this trauma is coming from, connecting the dots, and then actually breaking that link intentionally by, you know, recognizing, oh, that's what's going on, and I'm not going to behave that way. I'm not going to act on that because I know that it's not real. Or, you know, it's just, it's basically, it's mindset, which is a lot of what, you know, you and I both do. A lot of it is thinking about how to behave differently in the future so that it doesn't continue.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to think and hope that with the work that you mentioned, and of course, in any type of trauma, when you seek out the help of a professional and you begin to take ownership of what's going on, changing your mindset, we know that the brain changes and develops new pathways all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it stands to reason that it's possible to perhaps, you know, slow down this, you know, or stop it altogether, depending on obviously a myriad of, you know, things that can be going on inside you and, you know, and how the healing works for you. But I think I would say that you have to really kind of, as you mentioned, take ownership of your own healing. And by doing so, the longer you do it and the earlier you catch it, hopefully it becomes less and less traumatic and impactful for future mm-hmm. generations. You know, of mm-hmm. course, assuming that, you know, those generations also seek help if they start to see, you know, kind of things starting to manifest and
right.
present themselves in their own life, right?
Right, right. And, you know, a lot of times it's really shifting from victimhood, mm-hmm. right, to empowerment.
No longer living like a victim and living like you're empowered, living like you're thriving and not letting this kind of stuff keep you stuck and down anymore. It's, I mean, you know, for all of the work that we do with the helping professional, a lot of it is our own mindset and our own hard work, right? Right? I mean, just, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that's partly the message of my CLEAR method is that, okay, this is, you know, yes, this is inside you, but you can do some things to control it. And I actually have a client who went through my program and her fibromyalgia symptoms dissipated.
Wow.
Along with her, you know, her anxiety and everything. So, you know, the power of the mind, I think, is often underestimated.
You know, the whole idea of neuroplasticity just gives hopes for trauma survivors. I mean, up until maybe just a couple of decades ago, we all thought that once your brain was damaged, that was it. And there was nothing else. And now, of course, we know that you can heal and create new pathways and new mindsets. And it's just amazing. So it definitely gives hope to all of us, no matter what type of trauma we have endured through our past. So the last thing I want to cover is your books. You are a two-time international best-selling author. So tell us a little bit about the books that you've written, what they're about, who they are geared towards, and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay, thanks. So the first book is called From Generation to Generation, Healing Intergenerational Trauma Through Storytelling. And that is, you know, part memoir and part self-help, and it details my healing method. And, you know, it's really geared toward second and third generation, you know, Holocaust and other trauma survivors. At the end of each chapter, their questions were, you know, I want people to think about what their own situation and how a family traumatic event, the history might have impacted them. And the second book, so also they're connected. So the first book is really mostly my childhood and a bit about my mother and my relationship and how it impacted me from, you know, in those years. And then I ended up taking care of her. She developed dementia And so then the tables were turned and I ended up in this situation where it was like, why am I taking care of this woman who didn't take care of me? And so I the second book is called The Daughter's Dilemma, a survival guide for taking care of an aging abusive parent. And I really wrote that because when I was going through that with my mother, which was almost 10 years, you know, all the books about caregiving were what an honor and what a gift it is to be able to give back to your parent for all those years that they put you first. And I went, that doesn't speak to me at all. And I realized it actually didn't speak to a lot of people.
I know, right?
I mean, whether you're the child of a Holocaust survivor or, you know, someone who abused you physically or emotionally, it, you know, we end up in this, again, dilemma of like, oh, you know, do I just let her, you know, go into a home and ignore her, which a lot of people told me to do. Mm-hmm. Why are you taking care of her? Just stick her away somewhere. And I'm like, I can't do that. Can't do that. So, and I'm sure a lot of people feel it. I could not have lived with myself had I done that. So, you know, there are lots of things that we can do to kind of get through that difficult situation. And so I decided to document it.
Well, both books just look incredible. And I know that is such an interesting thing that you brought up, because my dad, now, while he wasn't somebody who was the abuser in my particular case, he passed away this past November, and he had dementia just really bad. And just the struggle of that alone it's just so tough. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. wish that on anybody, regardless of whether they were the abuser or, you know,
right.
Not.
But did he get abusive through the dementia?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, my dad was always the sweetest, kindest, gentlest man you could ever imagine. You know, he would talk to anybody, get their shirt off his back. But later on in the final mm-hmm. weeks, he would get a little bit combative, I guess I would mm-hmm. say.
That's, yeah.
And it was heartbreaking because, I had done some research, so I kind of knew it was coming a little bit of, you know, what's going to happen in the later stages of this. But still, to see a parent who, in my case at least, was somebody who had never killed anything in his life other than a fly. And even then, he probably didn't like him doing it. But, you know, he was very kind, very sweet, gentle, heart of gold, would do anything for anybody. You know, not violent whatsoever. I'm not sure he ever even said a curse word in his entire life, to be honest with you. But to see him and to see this disease just take him down a road to where he was struggling that much that, I mean, obviously he couldn't communicate what he needed and we were trying to figure out what he needed.
Right, and that's so frustrating for them.
Oh my God, it was, like, I'm telling you, Emily, it was friggin' horrible. Like, I even thinking about it still just, mm-hmm. it's so hard because, yes, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, not to me in particular, but to my sister-in-law and my sister and my mom and some others who were helping to take care of him when I wasn't there. Yeah, he did get a little bit like that. And it was, oh my God, it was gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it is. Mm. It is. It's a horrible disease. And yeah, so my mom, who was fairly abusive and negative toward me throughout my life, at first she got worse with the dementia, and then, like, on the last 2 weeks, she was, oh, thank you for taking care of me. I was like, where did this person come from? You know,
oh, really?
Can I have more of that, please? But yeah, and then you end up mourning. You know, if you in this situation where you've had the abuse and then they kind of get nice, you mourn the parent you never really had. It's mm-hmm. a very strange, and there's no closure.
Yeah. I mean, it's grieving something that you never really had, but you wanted, and you know, your lost innocence, and oh my God, yeah, it's just
It gets so complicated. But as I, you know, in writing that second book, I found so many people. I mean, I felt so alone when I was going through that with her. And only afterwards, when I started, you know, doing this, the research on that book and talking with other people, it's like, oh, more people who feel that way too. So, you know, that again, I felt like, okay, I'm not crazy. Right. Well, that's debatable.
It's such a good feeling. I'm not crazy. Thank God I'm not crazy. Right.
You're crazy, but I'm not.
Right. This has been such an awesome podcast, and like the time just flew by, Emily. So I would love to bring you back because I would like to dive more into your personal story and some more of your work on a future.
Okay. I'd be honored to.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't we wrap it up here? You can tell everybody where to find you online, on social media, where they can get the books and all that good stuff.
Okay. So my website, as Matt said earlier, is traumahealingcoach.com. And you can find my books on Amazon or, you know, anywhere, your favorite bookstore. They're available through Ingram, so any bookstore can, if they don't already carry it, can get it for you. And online, you can find me on Facebook at Emily Wanderer Cohen, and Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Emily G. Cohen. Wow, we've got too many. And LinkedIn is Emily Wanderer Cohen. So.
This has been awesome. Emily, thanks so much for joining me here on the show today, for telling us more about intergenerational trauma, for sharing some of your work and your books. It's been incredible, and I cannot wait to bring you back again on the show.
Well, thank you, Matt. I've really enjoyed this. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is intended for educational and informational purposes only and is not a substitute for or supersedes professional medical help or mental health counseling. Thank you again to my sponsors, INLPCenter.org and Daily Recovery Support. I hope you'll consider checking them out as they've joined forces to help keep the lights on here at the podcast and help Beyond Your Past reach as many as possible with a message of hope. If you'd like to learn more about working with me as your coach, or if you're curious about what life coaching is and how it might be right for you, then head on over to beyondyourpast.com and claim your free one-hour session, where we can talk about the struggles in your life in the areas of anxiety and trauma recovery and see if coaching might be a great fit for you. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope that you'll subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, and share it with all your friends. See you next time.